blessings of love and respect we offer to all, in times past and present, who have opened the doors of wisdom, reuniting all beings with their intrinsic purity. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. The recitation of this rosary ever expands the awakening of faith in the three jewels, Bodhi, Dharma, and Sangha. Bodhi, Saranam, Gacchami, Dutiyampi, Tatiyampi, Sabaha. I turn to the perfect nature of truth for guidance. Again and yet again, may it be so. Dharma, Saranam, Gacchami, Dutiyampi, Tatiyampi, Sabaha. I turn to the teachings for guidance. Again and yet again, may it be so. Sangam Saranam Gacchami, Dutiyampi, Tatiyampi, Sabaha. I turn to the holy order for guidance. Again and yet again, may it be so. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Dukkha, the noble truth of suffering. Dukkha Samudaya, the noble truth of the origin of suffering. Dukkha Nirodha, the noble truth of the extinction of suffering. Dukkha Nirodha Gamini Patipada, the noble truth of the path that leads to the extinction of suffering. So long as these four noble truths are not understood, we shall wander in sorrow and ignorance. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. All formations are transient, anicca. All formations are subject to suffering, dukkha. All things are without a self, anatta. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Namo prajna paramita hridaya, homage to the wisdom in the heart. Form is not different from emptiness. Emptiness is not different from form. This is the teaching of our spiritual ancestors, Gautama Buddha, and all the great teachers who have transmitted the Dharma to this holy day. Blessed is the knowledge of emptiness. Homage to the devotees of this and all paths of self-purification. May all find simplicity, the joyous and practical guide. The Dharma, being the contents of enlightenment, in which there is no bondage and no suffering, offers freedom from the cankers of ignorance and fear. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Sangha is the holy order of spiritual ancestors, monks, priests, and all those who follow and practice this path. Homage to the Sangha. Homage to all who are approaching this holy path. Homage to all who follow and establish this holy path. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. By compassionate comprehension that dissipates delusion, by compassionate aspiration that harms no one, by compassionate speech that makes for clarity, by compassionate self-discipline that brings no regret, by compassionate livelihood that brings no discredit, by compassionate endeavor that results in goodness, by compassionate mindfulness that proves this path, by compassionate awareness that leads to nirvana. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. With this recitation, I do confirm my acceptance of these three pure precepts. The precept of restraint and religious observances. The precept of obedience to all good laws. The precept to benefit all sentient beings. And in this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. With this recitation, I do confirm my acceptance of these 10 grave prohibitive precepts. Not to lead a harmful life, nor to encourage others to do so. Not to take that which is not given. Not to commit or participate in unchaste conduct. Not to tell lies nor practice believing the fantasies of authority. Not to use intoxicating drinks or narcotics, nor assist others to do so. Not to publish other people's faults. Not to extol oneself and slander others. Not to be avaricious in bestowal of the teachings. Not to be angry. Not to speak ill of this religion or any other. And in this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. In the practice of loving kindness, in the practice of pure attention, in the practice of ever-expanding faith, in the practice of constant devotion, in the practice of inquiry through correct dhyana. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. O happy blessed day, O happy blessed place, O happy blessed time, O happy blessed path, O happy blessed opportunity. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Here in humble submission, in order to experience this most perfect now, I deeply vow and sacrifice all thoughts, all tensions, all pressures and desires. I am born of karma. I am heir to karma. I abide in karma, and I am supported by karma. Whatever I do creates karma, and I shall surely experience this karma. The merit for all good acts I do freely offer to all beings. Dutyampi tatyampi savaha. Again and yet again may it be so. Willingness is the name of the key to the gate of awakening. For even to awaken from deep sleep and face the new day, there must be the willingness to do it. Here in my hand is the opportunity, and the way is clear beyond the gate of thought and desire. There is no self and other, as the awareness of pure, undisturbed consciousness slips into all consciousness.
Thank you.
We are here to end suffering. If ending suffering is more important than anything, we will end suffering. If ending suffering is not more important than anything, we will not end suffering. If I am suffering, it is because I am choosing something over ending suffering. We are not here to create and cling to beliefs. We are here to pay attention. We are here to use everything in our experience to see how we cause ourselves to suffer, so we can drop that and end suffering.
Looking at something that I'd like to hear what you have to say and would love to hear what other people have to say about the topic as well, if anyone's moved, it's perceiving myself to be treated unfairly.
Perceiving yourself to be treated unfairly.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And so there's a self who's perceiving and there's a self who's feeling treated unfairly, perhaps.
Yeah. Let me see if I can get with that.
Okay.
Yeah, that's actually kind of a scary thought right there. There's a self perceiving and so let's see. Yeah, it's just pretty basic, you know, well, this person said that or did that and towards me, and so and look how in response to this, and someone else is doing this and they're not getting mad, and or you know, trying to think, that's kind of the extent of it. And so it's someone who I think feels left out, separate.
Feels left out and separate.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. And victim is probably a good word for it. And kind of mm-hmm. like, you know, why is this happening? It shouldn't mm-hmm. be happening this way, because clearly I've done everything that I'm supposed to do, and or you know, whatever on my part, and yet this is happening. Why? Mm-hmm. And so so it's and also there's you know, on the going out, there's judgment and anger and bitterness, and so it's yeah. It's a place of real suffering.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So something's happening. You're getting information somehow that you should be doing something differently. Is that?
Let's see. I guess that could mm-hmm. be it. Mm-hmm.
And so who comes in is, this isn't fair, why is this happening to me, that other person is doing it too, and they're not getting, is this kind of, am I on track
yeah.
here?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So there's also seeing something that's going on with somebody else, and
yeah.
Yeah. and then a whole bunch of comparison going on, and you wind up feeling, being in feeling angry, feeling victimized, feeling treated unfairly. Mm-hmm. And why is this happening to me? Mm-hmm. And where do you get with that, Michael? What do you see?
Well, part of what happens, I think, is that I'm trying to look at what's going on with me, mm-hmm. and I see that part of what happens is I jump to this place of kind of judgment about myself that may not be helpful.
Judgment of oneself is rarely helpful.
I should be, this, and if I were this, then I should love everyone and everything unconditionally, and even if this happens, but it should never happen to begin with, because I should be perfect, so I should only be getting praise, and I don't know.
Can you kind of begin to see the story lines?
Maybe.
Is it familiar?
Yeah, it's very familiar. That's the thing.
Yeah.
It's very familiar.
Yeah. And have you been able to step out and look at the guy who's going through the process, or are you still sort of in it?
Yeah, I think they're right, and I should behave differently, but I can't. Something along those lines, I'm stuck. Otherwise, this wouldn't be happening.
Mm-hmm. So almost a victim to your own behavior.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then there's going, well, it's happening. So this is the place of, part of it is, well, I could argue. I could say, yeah, but, or, mm-hmm. well, but look at all these great things. And like that, and then there's...
And who would you be saying that to? The external?
The external.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Because it sounds like there's a belief that good things you're doing are not being seen.
Yeah. That's a big part of it.
Yeah.
Yes. Exactly.
Yes.
So, and then it's like, well, if I don't do that, then, maybe I should have done that. It's important to communicate. That's part of communicate. And then it's like, well, but then I'm arguing. And so I don't know. That's a tricky one too.
Yeah, and it sounds like a caught place.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Let's see. I think Dave's got a suggestion.
Well, I don't know if I have
some input.
I don't know if I have a suggestion or input, but I do have my experience of it. So I've been living in this environment for a long time. You know, as Michael was speaking, what I was thinking about is we've been really kind of talking along these same lines. We've got some folks who just arrived on Friday to spend a month in training here at the monastery. We've been kind of talking about sort of how it works and what monastic training is all about and stuff like that. And kind of along those lines, you know, one of the things we were talking about, I think it must have been yesterday, was that being in relationship with the monastery is like a small version, or maybe it was Friday night, I can't remember, a small version of being in relationship with life, kind of with a capital L.
Yeah.
And it's
mm-hmm.
difficult to be directly in relationship with life and practice with that, because it takes a heck of a lot of awareness and subtlety in awareness to be able to kind of be in relationship with life instead of being in relationship with a projection onto life from ego that's full of right and wrong and shouldn't
and be. And all the voices that want to chime in about how it should be or shouldn't, or, yeah.
Yeah. And what we're practicing, if you look, this to me anyway, one of the things we're practicing here in this environment is giving ourselves over to something larger than mm-hmm. me and my ego. Mm-hmm. And in a lot of ways, you know, it really wouldn't matter who we're giving it over to. You know, we could put Pache and Sadie in charge. They could do whatever they do. And we could have the same spiritual benefit because we would be giving ourselves over to something other than ego and then following whatever the guidance was.
Yeah, we'd be letting go of that personal viewpoint that sort of pushes us around life.
Yeah. I actually read this a little bit on the side, but I read something not too long ago about this certain person who was... ended up being, it's Gio Kinnett actually, who ended up being a, you know, quite a, I think charismatic, I don't know much about her, but charismatic and, you know, large Zen figure in America. And it was about the training she went through in Japan.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my gosh. And it was crazy mm-hmm. because, and it's a long, too long a story to tell, but it was not... There was very little, it seemed like, of a compassionate overview of what was happening. There was mm-hmm. a bunch of people in their conditionings basically duking it out. She went through incredible prejudice for being female, for being a Westerner, and all this stuff that happened. And she came through the other side with something sounds pretty darn close to enlightenment.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
clarity, maybe is a better word. And it just, and she had the willingness to use that experience, even though, you know, anybody, I mean, the stories... I mean, like
yes.
one of them was, you know, she had malnutrition
mm-hmm.
because they basically wouldn't let her have enough food and just all kinds of crazy stuff like that. But she used those circumstances to come through that with clarity. And, you know, what we've got here, it feels like to me is, and this is just my experience, but it's not like that. It's the same opportunity. But it really feels like this place is conducted with clarity and with compassion and kindness
yeah.
coming from our guide.
Mm-hmm.
And so anyway, what was coming up in that for me in that previous conversation is, I mean, I've been to that place 10,000 times myself.
Yeah.
You're right. Yeah. It's just unfair. I'm being mistreated. You know, it's, you know.
Yeah.
But every single time what I've always got to is what's being pointed at is, in some way, am identified with egocentric karmic conditioning, and in some way cannot see that.
Yes.
That's what it comes down to every single time.
Yeah.
It never is the case, I don't think, I don't know if I can really say this, but that it's not fair.
Mm-hmm.
That's just
mm-hmm.
coming from the defensiveness, from ego defending itself.
Yes.
You know, whenever there's something I run into here, it's always me running into some way that I cannot see myself as my heart sees me,
yeah.
and so I'm
yeah.
suffering.
Yeah, I'm remembering the story Sherry tells periodically of the monk who was here who did something around a whole bunch of tools that were left out and was going on about how it wasn't right that they were left out and this ought to happen and that ought to happen. And Sherry pointed to him saying, you're right about they should be put away, but it's coming from egocentricity.
Mm-hmm.
What you're pointing at is not coming from center, it's coming from an identity.
Mm-hmm.
And it feels like that same kind of discernment that we're being trained to be able to make. But we don't know. That's the mirror there saying, okay, take a look.
Mm-hmm.
Take another look.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think we'll ever have the big picture. You know, you look at what happens in the world, and it would be easy to say, life is really unfair. You know, horrible things happen to people all over the place, but it just doesn't seem like that's really it. It's more
yeah.
like, it's just in some way that we have no grasp of, life is rolling through time, and all these things are happening. And in the middle of it, from here, there's this experience of everything that's happening is the best for all.
Yes.
And if we lose that perspective within ourselves, then we start defending ego. And we start trying to hold on to our separation instead mm-hmm. of unifying ourselves with a life that is just rolling through time. And, you know, of course, that's the experience of suffering, you know, the separation. And just giving ourselves over, no matter, really, no matter what we're giving ourselves over to, in a way, that's the experience of happiness and freedom.
Yeah, just letting go, holding on to that little personal self who thinks it knows something.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I'm really grateful for this place, and it seems miraculous to me often that it exists the way it exists, and it has retained clarity through all this time and all the changes that have happened, and the practice still has the integrity that it does. And it's just, people have been showing up here doing the same thing for a really long time now, and just showing up and in the silence and in the privileged environment, and with the guidance, just running into exactly what they need to run into, and then letting them go and moving into a clearer place.
Yeah. Thank you.
I can really get into that. I'm not being properly appreciated. It's not a fair place. It's a real familiar karmic place for me. And one of the things that I know when I get into that, I now know, I sometimes don't know at first when I get into it because I'm so into it, but if I can step back from it, it's really one of those center of the universe places, because I'm projecting onto other people that I am the focus of their attention.
And everything they're doing.
It's all about me. And sort of, when I can step back far enough, it's almost kind of embarrassing. but I'm in it for it. It's, the entire world, the entire system, the entire environment is focused on putting me in this place, conveying these messages to me.
Yes. And isn't it amazing how that tends to be repetitive?
Yes.
It's usually the same, perhaps slightly different content, but the same.
Same thing, yeah. I mean, the themes are the same. It's not fair. I'm not getting my proper credit. And what I really get is how outward-oriented all of that is, how I'm looking out there for out there to tell me who I am.
Yeah.
at the same time, the ego is telling me who I am.
Mm-hmm.
And neither source is a good sort of intention.
Yeah. Yeah.
Another thing I noticed, I was dealing with this a lot at one of the retreats we were on, because I was in it. I was just in this, not being properly appreciated place. And one of the things I saw was that for someone in here, there was a belief that if I wasn't getting external messages of approval, I didn't exist. I was dependent upon those to exist. But when I was talking about that with a mentor, I was doing self-facilitation, and the mentor, God bless her, stepped in and said, what I saw was, this is hard to articulate, but who I thought I was when the approval was there and was telling you that I was who I was supposed to be wasn't who I am.
Yeah.
That just felt huge.
Yeah.
And actually, I had to leave myself to enter this other self that the messages were telling me that I was. And the other thing I saw was that in that movement, there was no love.
Mm-hmm.
There was no love for this person.
Mm-hmm. Just abandonment.
Just abandonment of this person, yeah.
Let me check back in with Michael.
It's being very helpful.
Being very helpful.
Yeah. Relating to, well, I have gotten to, maybe this is best for me, which is a little different from maybe this is best for all. So that's something that, because I thought that was, wow, this is good. I'm seeing maybe this is the best for me. And it's, so that's...
So expanding that.
That's expanding that a little.
Yeah.
And then, I related to the moving, abandoning myself in order to look outward to take in someone else's approval, how there was just something else in that too.
Well, it sounded like the guy who got really upset had wanted approval and wasn't getting it, and wanted acknowledgement of all the good things he's been doing and wasn't getting it. So the first place to look to get it, perhaps, is.
Yeah, which is very, well, it's a good one to remember.
Yeah.
It seems tricky to remember.
Good place for recording.
Uh-huh.
To help as a reminder.
Yeah. No, thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Susan. I noticed that that process as always has one thing that it wants, and it wants to take me away from whatever I'm committed to. Mm. So it's really dangerous, because for me it's really, really believable.
Mm-hmm.
So whether it's a job or a relationship or a commitment to the monastery, it always, its purpose is to make me feel really bad. And it's very karmic for me as well. It usually finds evidence really quickly that it's true.
In the externals.
In the externals, yeah. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, it's swift.
It's swift. Yeah. And it's, yeah. And so the great thing about the monastery is the process continues here when there's not that much evidence. I mean, there is, because ego will always find it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But, you know, nobody's really saying to you, you know, you're less than, and I like Melinda better.
Yeah, no, the Lord does not say
the worst monkey we ever saw. Before, you know, I never got a note like that, at least when I was here. So, but we get a note, and, you know, you're just like, I know what they really mean. It's not what they really mean. I mean, the worst job I ever had to take, I've said this before, is the work director position. Because it's or the guide or the guest master, because everybody thinks they know what that note really means.
Yeah.
And
it's amazing how limited those.
Totally. Yeah. It's not like that note means, hey, just go put I got a note one time it said, water needs to be in the cat water thing or something. And I'm like, I put water in it 5 minutes ago, so I wanted to, you know, scrawl the note back and say, I did my job. Who cares, right? You know, somebody spilled it, the cats tipped it over, a dog came by, we don't know. Yeah. Water needs to be in there.
Yeah, it doesn't say, Susan, you are a wretched bad
exactly. That's what I thought it said.
Yeah.
You have not performed this job.
Yes.
And, you know, and then there is that unfair, well, I gotta, you know, this is not fair, you know, I have my next job to do, and now I gotta go, can't somebody else do it? You know, you just go into your whole story about the whole thing. And pretty soon it's like, forget it, I'm not appreciated, I'm out of here. You know, this is slave labor anyway, is where my head used to go. And it does, and the funny thing is, I remember sharing, especially, we had pea birds, you know, I say this a lot, we had those peacocks when I was there.
Yeah.
And, I mean, you would get the porch perfectly clean.
The peafowl were not in cages.
And the peafowl didn't give a crud. You know, they came and pooped on my porch. And I remember Sherry walking by, and I'm like, you know, and she comes up, she says, you know what this is training you for? And I had no idea, you know, I'm like 22 years old, or 25, I don't know. And I'm like, huh? Children. Well, now I got the children, right? It's the same darn thing.
Yeah.
Unappreciated, they don't care, you know. I can either just know they're a pea bird, you know, or a sport
doing
girl
what
doing what
do.
They do.
Yeah.
You know, that note just means what it says.
Yeah. And we get to see, as you're pointing at, we get to see all of our stuff come up in the way for each of us that it comes up.
And to stay.
Work with, and to stay here, stay with the commitment instead of, I'm out here, this place is abusive.
Right, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
And that's what
because the abuse is happening in here.
Exactly. And when we can see that it is lying to us.
Yeah.
It's lying. It's lying.
It's lying.
It's lying. Mm-hmm. It may not be fair, but when I believe it, I am. And what is fair, you know?
Yeah.
I don't
it's
know.
It's one half of the duality.
It's a really compelling egocentric karmic conditioning piece of process.
Especially for those of us who have siblings.
Yes, especially for those other times. And it's funny to watch, you know, for me watching the kids, you know, nothing's fair. And, you know, finally I just want to say, well, it's not fair. Let me tell you what I've done today. Can we break your kid? You know, why do you say it's not fair? But it's just what we perceive. So anyway, I can just relate to it and staying with it and the sensations it creates have been so helpful. For me to have learned here to just stay anyway, and it passes like the weather.
Yeah.
It really does.
Yeah, and our perspective shifts.
Our perspective shifts. Mm-hmm. We settle back in, and then something else comes up.
Yeah.
And, you know, when I left the monastery, I get to learn to stay in jobs and have the same practice. Mm-hmm. Stay in marriages and with kids. You know, it's just the same thing. Can I come back here and with great compassion turn my attention away from that story?
And just be right here.
And just be right here.
Fairness, not fairness, right. Really is a non-issue.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Even though it feels like it is.
Yeah.
Judy. I've just been through a couple day and a half of orientation for mm-hmm. deepening practice. Mm-hmm. I have to say there's part of me who doesn't ever want to get a note.
Doesn't ever want to get a note. Okay.
and then there's yeah. part of me who really wants that note. Mm. Just saw that coming up in our mm-hmm. Orientation and stuff. But I've been looking at something in the workshop leading up to the retreat, which uh-huh. was when I, you know, finally committed and found out that I was going to be able to come here. This huge storm of conditioning got kicked up. Mm-hmm. And a big part of it is around like the physical challenge of being here, attending every thing I'm expected to be at, mm-hmm. You know, meeting the expectations.
Showing up. Nonstop.
Mm-hmm. And what I've seen so far is, I think, it's a dark room, there's a dark room, light room thing that goes on with me physically. Mm. So I thought, or it came to me or something, like, I wonder if, you know, if my body can be in the light room or in the dark room, like my mind. Mm-hmm. I think there's something about that. Like, I'm really looking at it. For me, one of my issues is I can sit in meditation in physical comfort, very, very centered, mind peaceful, body peaceful, and get, like, really attached to that kind of meditation.
That's a good one.
The first period of sitting that I had here was a good one. Uh-huh. I had been able to go to the meditation hut and do an hour of yoga, and then come and sit. And then we had orientation stuff, and we had a sitting workshop, or sitting clinic mm-hmm. is part of it. And I wanted to bust some voices that were saying, like, when I don't have that kind of good meditation, that I'm the wrong person. Like, it's proof that mm-hmm. I don't practice enough, or mm-hmm. I'm just not good enough.
So there's a little theme the voices tune in on when you have not such a good meditation.
Yes, mm-hmm. yes, and it really, it's so interesting because it's almost like something's going on in my body and it's mirroring what's going on in my mind. So, like, my issue is upper back, so I'll have this little sensation start mm-hmm. in my upper back. And almost like a conversation starter.
Yeah, I bet it is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then it can go, you know, it can go so many different places, mm-hmm. but one of the places it can go to is extreme discomfort. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so I, you know, I put that out there, and the guidance that came back was about, was like, if ego can get you to, say, leave the meditation hall, mm-hmm. then it knows that, and it's going to try to do that.
It knows there's some waffle room.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
If there
so,
is.
Yeah. So I'm really, really looking at that because maybe a pseudo-Zen voice would tell me in the midst of the pain, like, where's the compassion here? Like,
What's fair? What's not?
Yeah. Because I actually have a little, you know, project or whatever that I can kind of relax back, do a movement, and there's relief, you know, from the pain. And boy, I'm just seeing all this juice.
Yes.
Juice there.
Yeah. Because I can make something happen that will change what's going on that I doesn't like.
Yeah, so it occurred to me, like go through the five processes with this, you know, beliefs, projections.
Who's there?
All that. Yeah, who's here? And something really interesting happened. There is a belief that if I sit too long in that pain, that I will damage myself. I will damage my body.
Yeah. Anybody ever have that kind of thought? Mm-hmm. Your meeting was killing you in here?
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. And too long being, who knows?
Yeah, that's not clear at all.
But it sounds like it really seeing storylines.
Yeah, and I'm really going to be looking at this whole thing about how the mind process paralleling the physical process, because yesterday in my bad sit, I had that thought like, oh, I could really hurt my back, and in the past I actually have really hurt my back, and there's some kind of response where the muscles kind of seize up in a
makes the back hurt.
They seize up and it's like a seizure or something. Like they seize and release and seize and release. Like and the first time that ever happened to me was when I actually needed to have like medical attention for this. Like, you know, and that thought occurred to me. And I started feeling this twitching.
Yeah.
Which was not that thing at all. But then I was just
a response
like,
to yeah.
There's, you know, there's the thought and then the, you know, there it is.
And something you pointed out early, it seems to me really important around making the commitment not to move or making the commitment not to leave the hall. If there's waffle room, that's where conditioning can come in and make us absolutely miserable, because it can take us into should I, but if I've made the commitment, I've just made this commitment, it takes out that whole really angst of back and forthing, should I, shouldn't I,
yeah,
because I made a commitment, we don't have to talk about it anymore.
Yeah, I've seen the benefit of that, that internal commitment to myself and other places. So here we go. Here's what's up now.
Yeah. It can make it so much more relaxing.
And this idea, is it kind? From a larger perspective, you know, if you know, moving seems kind to that limited perspective that I sit in, but if it's possible to get beyond this, that's a bigger, you know, there's the kindness.
Then sometime in life there comes a time when I can't move, and I need to be with exactly what's there, because I don't have any choices. I know that I can. I know that I'm up to it.
Okay.
I'm looking at
kind of this idea of just awareness, or yesterday we got some guidance in my meditation. I had been, you know, conditioning was really coming up when I'm sitting, and then I would kind of say, it's all okay, it's all okay. And we got some guidance to not necessarily do reassurances during meditation. Mm-hmm. And so I was just doing that, and it was kind of scary in a way. So when I started to think about it, like I didn't have a defense. Like, the reassurances are like my defense or something.
Uh-huh.
So just kind of letting it just happen.
Yeah. So going in kind of prepared.
Yeah, yeah.
With some safety devices.
Yeah.
And then the suggestion being, be there without the safety devices. Mm-hmm. Just be there with the breath.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so you watch as there's a process of... kind of.
Yeah, and I'm just really seeing it. Like, I think the way for me to deal with kind of all the reactivity I was feeling was, you know, I've started lately, like, to say thank you, you know, to everything. Thank you. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I'm still planning to do this, maybe one of those discernment areas, but just now, listening, I was trying to, like, just let the words go by, and I was like, oh no, those words are going by. I'm not responding to them. Like, I'm not receiving them in my heart, or, like, saying thank you, mm-hmm. or, like, just letting... Yeah, so anyway, that's kind of what I'm exploring here.
So is it that you're sitting, and words are going by, and then the part of you gets engaged?
Yeah.
It really feels like... she's not doing her job or something? I can't. That's my own language, not yours. So.
Like, I need to put in the positive energy. Like,
there's something I need to do.
Yeah, yeah. Like, I need to do something to make this okay. Or else it'll be a negative experience if I don't throw in a little positive reinforcement. Or
yeah. It's kind of still that safety, that belt, the tools that, yeah. There's something I need to do here to make this okay, or to make it, I don't know what your language is for it, but...
Yeah, I mean, I'm just uncovering it now.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. Yeah, it's going to be really interesting to see that, now that you're kind of aware that that's working. Because it's keeping somebody engaged in doing.
Yeah.
And what would be there, what would be the life experience, if there were just an observation of life going by.
Yeah.
Not even going by, of life living. Instead of jumping in, trying to make something happen.
Yeah.
Good. Yep.
I saw this really interesting thing this morning. I use a neti pot in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
And, this happened to me when I was here last summer. I'm a little horrified at the amount of water that it uses to do it. It was just so funny when I was doing it. I was freaking out. I'm like, there's so much water, and I'm wasting. And you know, I tried to do it with colder water, and it was like, I got an ice cream headache. And I was like, okay, this is What are we going to do about this? So what I noticed was something came in that was like, it's selfish.
Mm.
This is selfish.
Mm-hmm.
And to not do it is unselfish. Mm-hmm. So those are my choices.
Yeah. So we have a duality.
Be selfish or unselfish.
Mm-hmm.
And I had recorded yesterday. I don't remember why, but something that was like, it's okay if you're selfish. Like, it's okay. I'll still love you if you're selfish. And so I happened to listen to that after I did the neti pot this morning, and it occurred to me that was duality, and that I didn't have to participate in that at all.
Mm-hmm.
And not only that this experimentation with, like, just the fact that I want to find a way to use less water. I just gave myself, like, a lot of credit for that.
Yeah.
And also too, just this thing of like, okay, so, you know, maybe we can try every other day, or like there's some way that I can move towards, you know, honoring what I feel is honored here without it being selfish or unselfish.
Yeah.
And
that place perhaps of what is most compassionate for all.
For all, what is most compassionate for all, mm-hmm. Exactly. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, that felt like a miracle.
Yeah, stepping out of that duality.
I was like, there's so much possible now.
Yeah.
Like, once that is
yes.
gone.
Yes. Because it's a true, it sounds like true caring from the heart.
Mm-hmm.
I want to care for this being, and I want to care for the environment. Mm-hmm. I want to not use too much water or whatever the mm-hmm. too much is.
Right.
But to live in caring, and how can I do that rather than I'm selfish if I do this, or I'm not selfish if I don't do this, or,
it was such an opening. It was so interesting to, you know, that's what's so amazing about this practice, is like, I don't even know, sometimes I'm in the ditch, or I'm headed there, and, because selfish and unselfish, like, those feel like spiritual principles.
yes,
but it's just a duality.
Yeah.
And
we make it up.
And we make it up. Mm-hmm. We make it up. What is it? You know, and it moves. You know, depending on who's there and like
yes.
what we want and yeah,
depending exactly. on who's there. Yeah.
Well, like,
yeah.
conditioning me there. I was like, yeah. I'll just say again, it was felt like a miracle.
Yeah. Yeah. Big opening.
Big opening. Thank you.
I've been suffering in the last year or so over issues that seem to have a lot to do with aging. And the form it takes is I'll notice I don't have the same kind of energy that I used to.
Mm-hmm.
I'll feel tired in a way that I'm used not to. Or I'll have some kind of ailment that will bring up a lot of, well, beliefs
yeah.
about mm-hmm. Aging. And then there'll be a whole scenario around getting older, being sick,
mm-hmm.
dying.
So conditioning will take it out to the end mm-hmm. about this is your life. Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And I haven't really found a very skillful way of responding to this.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So that's why I'm bringing it up.
Uh-huh. And what have you done? What have you done so far?
Well, I do reassurances, and I ask a mentor. And it's pretty much the same sort of general kindness, compassion, acceptance.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the acceptance part is important. There are certain things that we can't change.
Yeah, yeah. Aging is, we do grow older,
mm-hmm.
if we're lucky.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Gratitude is another
mm-hmm.
kind of statement I make to myself.
Yeah.
And yet, I'm still, the issue doesn't go away.
Mm-hmm. So, and are there places where you can detect their story going on about, I mean, it sounds like you can when you realize that the whole future is being laid out. And
yeah, it's really pretty clear that mm-hmm. conditioning is heavily involved in
yeah.
the
yeah.
suffering that, and the way I'm responding to, and the whole creation of the scenario.
Yeah, yeah, and it gets a lot of support socially, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
In terms of
yeah.
getting older is something we try to prevent in a lot of advertising themes, and yeah, yeah,
mm-hmm.
yeah, which makes it more challenging to work with that issue.
Right.
Yeah. And it sounds like kindness toward the being is definitely a way of that you're finding that responding is helpful. It doesn't necessarily take away the whole story, mm-hmm. but it can be reassuring.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. In a recent, maybe a month ago, of open air, one of the callers brought up the subject of death, and Sherry said it was something she'd like to give more attention to at some point, and mm-hmm. that really was something that I would like to be able to find some greater acceptance.
That death truly is inevitable. Mm-hmm. Sooner or later, we figure that later is, you know, we often sort of assume it's going to be later. And of course, that doesn't happen for everybody. But yeah, just the subject of death in general would be.
I look around and I project that some people have made their peace with it. Mm-hmm. And I think, well, I haven't. So I've been in just giving attention to the importance of making peace, with accepting. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And how do you know, what tells you that you have not made peace with it?
Just because there's this particular scenario, I have brought up in the level of fear that's part of that whole scenario. Uh-huh.
And are there times when it's possible to step out of that fear and see the person who's experiencing it? Or does it feel when you're in it that you're just in it?
I'm not sure. Mm-hmm. No. I think there is some degree of being able to step out. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, maybe we could hear from other folks. If I imagine there may be folks in the room who have looked at the same issue.
Yeah, I'd like that.
Excuse me. Professor Wright. Congestion. When I was younger, in that invincible place, immortal place.
Yeah.
Every now and then, the idea that I would die would come up, and it was always, you know, it's probably not going to happen. Charlie and I did meet eventually, but sometime way out in the future.
So far away.
That's when I forget it.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm 63. Mm-hmm. And it's still way out in the future. The process hasn't changed. The realization, the looming fact, gets bigger and bigger every day. Uh-huh. You know, I'll take better care of my body. It's huge. Uh-huh. When I get older.
Right.
I'm still doing that.
Yeah.
But now that voice that says, "How would they get down?" It's louder daily.
Yeah.
One of the best things, it was just a quick one-liner out the door thing that the guide has said to me in recent years is, I refuse to live in a story about getting older. Mm. And so it's a practice of mine to just watch when any story, doesn't matter, triggers about getting older, mm-hmm. whatever it is, mm-hmm. to say, no.
Yeah.
That's a story.
Yeah. Even, in, for me, even something like, well, this is happening because you're old.
Yeah.
Or because you're older.
Yeah.
Or
yeah.
This is all part of getting older.
Yeah. You know, it's yeah. just doesn't mean anything.
Yeah. So not to latch on to any of those stories, just drop them when they appear. Mm-hmm.
I started volunteering in a hospice about 8 months ago or a year, and just what I've seen is people don't transform on their deathbed. They mm-hmm. basically are the same person that they always were. And that has definitely inspired me in how mm-hmm. I practice.
So it doesn't, there aren't these last minute transformations. No. All of a sudden I see the light.
No.
Yeah, go no. peacefully.
Rarely. Yeah. I mean, I'm not present with people who usually pass, and it's, this, the same thing that they have been struggling with their whole life, they struggle with, still there. Mm-hmm. It's such a privilege to see that and do that work, and mm-hmm. That surprised me when I
you weren't expecting people
to be watching TV or to mm-hmm. have their same processes that they always have mm-hmm. and death doesn't transform it for them. Mm-hmm. Anyway, I just thought I would share that.
Well, and it just really practices though your hair were on fire as yeah. one of our, because it is.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, because the moment of death, however we want to be at the moment of the death, it would be good to start being that now.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, that's kind of my contribution as well. I was very sick when I was younger, and I came to the realization that it wasn't death that I was afraid of, it was life that I was afraid of.
That's a pretty big realization, isn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah. And so I can't control my death or when it comes or how it comes, you know, aside from being, you know, careful, but I can't control how I live.
You can control how you live. You right. can't control how you die. So we all got to get with whatever impact we can have on how we're living,
right.
which everybody in this room is obviously taking on.
Exactly.
Yeah. Thank you.
I was just struck with, I'm unwilling to live in a story. You know, I just cut it right there about getting old. I cut the about getting old part off because it's
yeah.
like, I'm willing to live in a story because that's just really fitting. I think that's mm-hmm. kind of like what we're looking at this morning and kind of why I was seeing mm-hmm. what I was looking at tying in. Part of the conditioning that has recently surfaced that I've seen so clearly is that there's been this story about how I need much more time to do what it is that I need to do. And their conditioning is coming up to grouse about how it needs that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, thinking that as a result of that, it was going to result in more time. As a matter of fact,
uh-huh.
the opposite has happened.
Yeah. The time being munched away.
And the wisdom behind it is absolutely profound, that what conditioning says I need is a complete lie, that with what I have the ability to make tremendous difference.
Mm-hmm.
And I become very careful with how I use it.
Ah.
I feel a lot of emotion coming up for me because it's amazing how pervasive all of that was.
I need more
time. Conditioning. Well, mm-hmm. not even, it's that's a segment of it. There's a whole thing that it's tied into, and how living in that was depleting
yeah.
so much energy, mm-hmm. and how it is that it's like conditioning would have me live in a life that would be the opposite of what would take care of me,
mm-hmm.
and it talks in ways that are very convincing that say, well, this will help. This can only help.
Yeah,
and it's like, well, no. It, that hasn't been my experience, and mm-hmm. everything that I thought that I wanted or needed has become the thing that is that was dragging me down. And as a result of the circumstance I have now, I have more energy. I have all the time it feels like I need. And I can't describe the amount of gratitude in. Thank God that was all just sloughed aside, that story was just weighing down so heavily and keeping me from seeing what's absolutely so.
Yeah, and keeping you from having all of the energy that life provides when the story isn't cycling at all.
Yeah, that I was adequate to life, that with whatever circumstance, and that there is a way to make things happen, which was part of the story too. There's no way to make this happen. There's no way to make. So I'm like listening to. There's no way to make it happen. That's what I got as a result of that.
Yeah,
and thinking that I need something different was going to provide the answer.
And it's back to that. I got to change the externals.
Yes.
When in fact, it sounds like what you've changed was the internals.
Yeah, the internals.
The perspective.
And my attitude about that, and it was. Now it's like just like this. I feel like I'm in this like really like I'm getting there, you know, like I'm working with it. I'm practicing with focusing my attention on what is here now rather than this story. So that's
And it sounds like the difference also between really jumping in and sort of swimming instead of resisting what's possible.
Yeah, we're having a story about what it's like to be swimming, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
But I
what it should be like.
I need the water
swim.
Waves. It's just a lie.
Yeah.
And I'm just so grateful for anything that comes up that puts me in a position that can that shows me that it's a lie, that the who is inside is much bigger than all of that.
That guy being pushed around by stories about time.
Yeah.
A couple more minutes.
Okay. Just one thing about older and death. I'm rushing my way through about figuring out how to get out of Medicare right now. So I thought I had a shocking experience of getting my Medicare card. That's sort of a marker. But actually, what came up for me around that subject of death. Was my mother's death, which I sometimes have talked about in a group, because it's so interesting to me. She had what I would call a great death. You know? And so far as I know, she had no spiritual practice. But what occurred to me one day was she did have a practice, and her practice was gratitude. She was someone who really was grateful for her life, and I suspect that's why she had a great death. There was no sense of unfinished business. There was nothing no sense of, I wish I had said that and didn't. And no sense of anything undone. That was my projection on her. And so the result was that all of us had her death as a great experience. So just, I have, for me it's been a model that I just saw recently that, I was kind of marveled, why was she so ready and so okay? And I think it was because her life practice was a practice of gratitude. And this was just another piece of it.
Yeah. It's so amazing, in a way, to think about not being grateful for life. And yet, that's what conditioning would have us living.
But she
gotta fix it, gotta change it, it's not right. I don't have enough time, I don't have. Instead of thank you, this is great.
Sorry.
All right.
I read a couple of days ago, I can't remember where, who said it. It was it was just a really short thing that struck me. It said, if you love life, you'll love death.
It's a nice note to end. Thank you.